start the recording, and I will welcome everyone to Moms Fighting Autism. If you're tuning in, this is our third annual autism conference, and I'm so glad that you're part of it. I'm your moderator, Nancy Bernotitis. Just a little housekeeping before we get started. If you're using your computer to participate, you can see the blue box on your screen. And on that box, you'll see the slides link, so you'd click that to view the slideshow. You can synchronize the slides with either your phone or the webcast audio by clicking the button at the bottom of the slideshow. Be sure to mute your computer if you're listening via the phone, too, so you don't get an echo. Live callers can ask a live question by pressing star 2. So if you're using your telephone to participate, you can press star 2 to raise your hand and ask a question. And if you're using your internet to participate, you can ask a question through your blue box. Today we welcome Dr. Jerry Cartzenell. He's going to be talking about the pressure cooker. Dr. Jerry, as we like to call him, is a fellow in the American Academy of Pediatrics. He specializes in the recovery of neurodevelopmental, chronic neuroinflammatory diseases, and hormonal dysfunctions. After receiving his medical degree at St. Louis University School of Medicine, he completed his residency in pediatric medicine in the Air Force. Following Desert Storm, Dr. Cartzenell practiced general pediatrics in private practice for 10 years until his fourth boy was diagnosed with autism. A nationally recognized speaker and New York Times bestselling author, Dr. Cartzenell has presented medical interventions that work to improve the lives of his patients who suffer from many types of medical conditions that include autism, allergies, inflammatory bowel disease, chronic constipation, chronic diarrhea, sleep cycle disruptions, and hormonal imbalances. He regularly teaches continuing medical education courses on children's health issues to physicians and other health professionals. His clinical approach is to treat the whole patient by carefully obtaining a full and complete history, and based on this history, obtaining very detailed laboratory evaluations. Individualized plans are implemented, integrating the very latest medical interventions that include both traditional and complementary medicine approaches. Welcome, Dr. Cartzenell.
Well, thank you very much for having me this evening, and I love giving this talk. You know, this is what I call the pressure cooker, living with ongoing traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, you've heard a lot recently in the news about post-traumatic stress disorder. We as parents with children with special needs would just love to be able to call it post-traumatic stress disorder. In other words, our kids are fine now, and now we just have to deal with putting the bits and pieces back to our lives after dealing with it. But many of us have this ongoing traumatic stress disorder that we have to deal with, and it's our body's response to chronic stress. So let's talk a little bit about that. But first, the attorneys tell me that I must tell you that the entire contents of this webinar are based upon my opinions, unless otherwise noted, and individual articles are based on the opinions of respective authors, and they remain the copyright. The information given in these talks are not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional and is not intended as medical advice. It is intended as a sharing of knowledge and information from the research and my experience in the community. So I encourage you to make your own healthcare decisions based upon your research in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. Now that I've got that through, I can really have some fun here. So let's talk a little bit about stress. And this is a phrase or a term that was coined by Hans Selye in 1936, who defined it as the non-specific response of the body to any demand for change. It can involve physical, mental, and emotional strain or tension. And it's a condition or feeling experienced when a person perceives that demands exceed the personal and social resources that the individual is able to mobilize. In other words, a little bit of stress is good for us. It helps us prepare us for tests or meet certain challenges. But too much stress over too long of a time can actually deplete our abilities to manage it in a safe and healthy fashion. So what do we call ongoing traumatic stress disorder? Because we say you must have a time. People will tend to agree that it's 3 months or more of a difficult situation. And the situation can consume all stabilizing factors and resources one has just to cope. I've had a mom call me and tell me I'm at the end of my rope. And I said, well, why didn't you just call me three knots above the end of your rope so we could take care of things so you're not in a free fall? And that's kind of cute, but if you have a special needs child, you can find yourself at wit's end, so to speak, really quickly with some of these kids, whether it be sleep deprivation or stool on the walls or whatever. So having too much stress can exceed one's ability to cope, and then that causes changes in how you live each day, how you sleep, how you exercise, what foods you choose, you know, just picking up something quick at a fast food restaurant, and, of course, recreation. And this is poorly recognized. I mean, very rarely does a physician say to a mom or a dad when they see him, how are you doing? Are you doing all right sleeping? Do you have some chest pain? Do you have problems breathing? Are you okay with this? Or we don't talk about these things. I don't know why, because, I mean, everybody has it. So stress, when it's increased a little bit, is good. It increases productivity. There's a deadline to be met, and all of a sudden I can get slides done. I can get things ready. I can get stuff done. But there is a point that is kind of a breaking point, that the straw that breaks the camel's back, and it's different from each of us. So you can look at other people and say, wow, they're doing well, and I just feel like I'm just crashing in on myself. We all have different abilities to manage stress. And it's kind of a roller coaster. Sometimes things are a little better, sometimes things are worse. But basically, it's both the external and internal forces that would apply to a person can cause profound changes in one's physiologic responses, resulting in an alteration of body function, such as sleep, such as feeling chest pain, such as feeling a tightness when you breathe, a lot of sighing, sadness, depression. And we'll talk about all these things in a little bit. But this is what I'm talking about, changes in you when chronically exposed to our lives. And they also add up. I mean, I wish it's like you get over the vent, you're done, but they do add up. So it's not just our kids. It could be prior surgeries that you may have had or infections, injuries, obviously special needs children. Many of our families are divorced or in the process of being divorced. That in itself is the most difficult thing to handle, being a single mom or single dad with a special needs child and facing financial issues. But we can go on and on about all the different stresses and all the different backgrounds families come from. But constant stress will eventually have a negative impact on the adrenal glands. And that's where we're going to go today. We're going to talk about our adrenal glands and how we can get them to be a little bit more bulletproof. They all add up over time. So before we get into the adrenal glands, I'll talk about that in a little bit. I just want to make it very clear that there are lots of things that impact us, whether we're in school and trying to raise a family, or we're a single parent, or we're in the process of being divorced, or even if you've had a life that's been pretty free of hopefully surgeries and hospitalizations, infections, and have a wonderful spouse, just having a child who's not sleeping or a child who's screaming all the time is enough to throw any one of us into a state of stress. So how do we manage this? I mean, how does the body handle stress in general? And we'll get down to particulars in a moment. But in general, we have two glands that sit on top of our kidneys, and they're called adrenal glands. And they're about the size of a walnut, and they do a lot of things. Obviously, what we're talking about here is one of the things that gain function is to help your body cope with stress. So you can see if you fry your adrenal glands, then you're not going to be able to cope with stress. They are responsible for resilience, energy, endurance, and they have a lot to do with the way you think and feel, how you perceive things, how when somebody makes a mistake at the cash register, you don't get hugely mad at them, or they cut you off in the road and you're not like freaking out with them. I mean, just how you manage stuff in your day-to-day lives. But the adrenal glands do so much more, okay? They help the proper utilization of carbohydrates and fats, proteins, energy kind of functions. They work with cardiovascular function, gastrointestinal function. They kind of control your allergic responses. You know, as we get older and we've been under a lot of stress, we find that we also seem to be having more allergies. They're important for repair, healing, control of inflammation, joint pain, back pain. Natural things that come from the adrenal gland help decrease inflammation, and without it, all of a sudden your body hurts more. They also have a big role in controlling your sex hormones and your salt balance, how much urine you make. So the adrenal glands are really, really important. But over time, the adrenal gland can become fatigued, and it's called adrenal fatigue. And you can Google that, adrenal fatigue. You can look at your symptoms. We'll talk about this more today. And because the adrenal gland is so key in all of our body processes, every organ will eventually be impacted if the gland becomes less productive, it becomes less responsive. So it's very important to keep this gland healthy. So there are things that can add to our stress that we can try and change, and there's some things that we wish we can change. So, for example, poor food choices, no vegetables, lots of chocolates, lots of carbohydrates, lots of alcohol, lots of coffee, things that keep us going and get us from the next moment, the next hour, the next half day, get us to being able to pick up our kids at school, getting them to therapy, and we constantly need to load ourselves with carbohydrates. So usually the adrenal gland keeps things running smoothly, but we can kind of override that temporarily with food choices, lots of sodas, for example, just the five-hour energy drinks. And then lack of sleep, whether it's the child who's not sleeping, which is a big part of my practice, by the way, getting our kids to sleep, or the parent who's so stressed that she just can't sleep well, she's tossing and turning, she just can't get a good night's rest, or our spouse is tossing and turning and we can't sleep well in the bed and they have to, you sleep downstairs or something. Staying late, staying up late at nights, researching. I have lots of moms who are independent researchers, bless their hearts, but they're staying up late and they're going to bed 1, 2 in the morning. And you can see I'll get emails written at 2 or 3 in the morning. It's like, what were you doing up at 3 in the morning? You need let me do that for you. Feeling powerless, stuck in a situation that just doesn't improve, add stress. And that's a tough one because we like to have control. If you have a broken arm, you go and you get it set, you put in a cast, and you have a knowledge, a start, a stop, when this will be over. With my son, Joshua, my wife said that at one point when he was at his worst, I'd rather this to have been leukemia. And I said, why? And she says, because in leukemia, in a year, you're burying your child or you have a cancer survivor, but it's over. There's an end point. I can see it coming. There's a finish line. And when you have children who are on the spectrum, we don't see a finish line. And that can be kind of stressful right there. That's kind of what we're talking about. And then because we're working with the kids so much, we are not very recreational. We're not doing things, or we're doing too much. I've got moms who run, 5 miles a day, 10 miles a day. That's what helps keep them on an even keel. And then I have moms who can't do anything. And enjoyable activities, things that you do for fun, they're just not there because how do you take a special needs child someplace to have fun? You're always worried about the child screaming, yelling, running away, and all the things that they do. And all of a sudden, nothing is really fun. It's just easier to stay at home. And if you noticed, at least with us, friends become scarce. People aren't coming over when you have a child on the spectrum, or you're not being invited over for dinners very often, and you find that you're not maybe welcome at church anymore. You're certainly not getting into small groups and doing things just aren't happening. So a lot of enjoyable activities shrivel away. Your recreation tends to shrivel away. Why is food choice and sleep? And you can see how long can a human being under this pressure cooker withstand and become bulletproof, and eventually something's going to cave. So what are some of the symptoms of adrenal fatigue? These are the adrenal glands not being able to make their hormones in an appropriate fashion. I'm thinking of cortisol. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But some of the symptoms that the parents report to me is that, it's just hard to get going in the morning. I can't really feel clear-headed till 10 or 11 in the morning. Not feeling refreshed. Here's a family who might sleep well, but when you get up in the morning, you don't feel like you slept at all. Craving salt. Difficult to get through the day. Everything is a chore. Everything. Your bodyhood. Everything is a chore. You find that you might be easily aggravated. Things that used to not bother you now bother you. And that's without even thinking about politics. You just get bothered by stuff. And maybe lightheaded even when standing up quickly. You feel kind of dizzy. I'm like, whoa, I don't know if I can make this. Kind of scary. Frequent illnesses. You find that you're getting sick more often. You feel depressed. Depression is a lack of joy. I mean, the pointy-bearded psychiatrist has all kinds of words for depression and what you feel, but I'm just saying things just aren't fun. You just can't find joy in anything. It's hard for you to laugh or smile. You might socially do it to be polite and give a little chuckle, but really you don't feel that joy. foggy and unfocused. Lots and lots of moms who just mental clarity is just not there. And, of course, memory. I had one mom say, I could not remember which exit to take off on the freeway that I drive every day. Just all of a sudden. And then you start getting scared about Alzheimer's disease and all this kind of stuff. And so that kind of puts more stress on her. Maybe something's happening to me and all. So if you think you might have adrenal fatigue, I saw a wonderful website called www.adrenalfatigue.org, and there's a test there, and you can take it and score yourself. You know, it asks you a lot more questions than these basic points here, and then it gives you a score so you get an idea of just where you might be with the adrenal fatigue. I think it's a great resource. Now, when we look at adrenal fatigue, one of the things that I will look at is some hormones. I can look at cortisol, and I can look at testosterone, and I can look at DHEA levels. And you can do this with saliva. And unfortunately, guys, you're going to need to get a doctor involved with this. And somebody knows who's going to look at you like, what are you talking about, adrenal fatigue? All you need is some Prozac, okay? Or you just need to buck up, mister. You know, you have a special needs, just get tough. Unless you walk in our shoes, be very careful about how you comment on how people respond to stress. This is the toughest job in the world, is taking care of, and I'm talking about one. What if you have two or three children at home? Maybe, you know, Lord bless you with two neurotypical kids and one is autistic. But I'll tell you, just having one child is going to be stressful in this day. So anyway, I can look at these hormones and get an idea, are we depleted? But I also want to look at the thyroid gland and the metabolic profile, the blood count, at the very least, and the strong consideration for a food allergy panel. Because, again, you may have become allergic to some foods, and they're adding a lot of stress. You keep eating wheat. You keep eating gluten yourself, let alone your child. You're craving sugar. You're craving processed foods, cookies, whatever, even if they're gluten-free. I mean, these products may not be good for you, and they're adding to your overall lower functioning self that you want to be. So I can make a determination of that. Now, again, when you read about decreasing stress in your life, the techniques of stress reduction, you know, they'll talk about breathing exercises and yoga, reading, exercising, sleep, asking for help. Then they talk about further, well, you either need to adapt to the current situation, change the situation, or leave the situation. And it's like, that wasn't written for us with kids, because it's very hard to adapt to a totally dysfunctional child. And to change it, well, that's what we're trying to do with conferences like this, how we can help these kids so they're not up all night, how they're not potty trained and making them potty trained, and how they're not screaming all the time. We're trying to change that. And then leaving the situation, well, as a parent of one of these kids, that's just not an option. Sometimes you wish you can send them by special delivery somewhere. Generally, I had one mom last night say, if you can't get my kid sleeping tonight, you'll find him in front of your door in the basket. You know, and I wrote her this morning. First thing I checked this morning outside my front door was there a kid in the basket? And there wasn't. So thank God that kid slept. So in asking for help. And help would probably need to come from a professional if you find that you've got this depression and stress that is just crashing you. You know, again, as we think about it, when you go on an airplane and they tell you about the little oxygen masks that come down, they say you need to put it on yourself first before you put it on your child, because if you go down, then the whole family is going to go down. And so it's really important that you ask for help if you're here. I can tell you from my experience working with parents, once you get into the cycle, unless you do something like what we're talking about today to intervene with it, it just seems to get worse and worse. So I just want you to be aware of that. All right. So the symptoms then that we've talked a little bit about, problems with waking, problems with sleeping, feelings of panic or pressure on your chest. Some women would say that it almost feels like they're having a heart attack. And very often they go to the emergency room thinking they're having a heart attack. And, of course, they make sure you're not having a heart attack and do the x-rays and EKGs and all that kind of stuff and say, oh, it was just a panic anxiety attack. Why don't you just take some 10X or whatever? And that's not going to help. Okay, I mean, yeah, it'll get you through Yeah, I mean, it's a great band-aid, don't get me wrong. But for a long term, since this is not a short sprint, but actually a marathon, we have to think about, well, how can I rejuvenate, how can I resuscitate my adrenal gland? And so it can become bulletproof, so I can manage taking care of a family with a special needs child. So dietary changes, very important. You need to, honest guys, you need to remove all the processed food, fats, fast foods, soda, increased coffee. Everybody says, no coffee. You can't drink coffee. You can't do caffeinated beverages. And that might be true if you're pretty darn severe, but I don't want to remove, you know, one or two cups of coffee from, we can't remove all the joy from your life. So for those of us who are coffee drinkers, you may want to switch to decaf or half and half, but you certainly don't want to get the grande mocha macchiato super extra espresso. You just can't do that anymore. Your adrenal gland can't process the sugar and the caffeine anymore, so just don't do that. Decreasing alcohol. I'll tell you with my son and his difficulties, my wife was an occasional Johannesburg Riesling white wine drinker, and she quickly evolved into a very heavy Cabernet Sauvignon drinker. So these kids can really challenge you, so be careful with the alcohol use, okay? You may need to get some allergy testing, the IgG RAS testing, to see if you have other food allergies such as gluten and dairy. I put sound familiar because many of our kids can't do these foods. And going gluten-free isn't necessarily the answer because there's still a lot of sugar in those carbohydrates. And that's always been my beef as a physician taking care of these kids, is that all the gluten-free stuff out there, that's a ton of sugar, and it's processed, and it's not good. These kids are now eating gluten-free waffles and gluten-free cupcakes and gluten-free whatever, and that's not good for them either because they're under a lot of stress. And that's another talk that I have, is if you think you have adrenal stress, how would you like to live in their body for a day or a week or forever like they have and deal with the chronic pain and the hand-over-hand therapies and doing the unpreferred activities? And their adrenal glands are shot too. Okay, so increase the consumption of vegetables, fruits, all organic, of course, if possible. And depending on where in the country, there are either farms. I mean, here I live in Southern California, and I must have passed three organic fruit, you know, places on the way to church this morning. So there's a lot of really cool things you can do. But even Costco has in the frozen food section organic foods too. So it's becoming more and more accessible and price-wise more affordable for many families. So for us as adults, we have to break the addictive cycle of sugar and white flour products. I'm just telling you now, just get over it and just do it. And for those of us who have been gaining weight with this process, you'll find that weight just falls off if you just totally get rid of all of your grains. Because they're saying right now, whole grains are best. Brown rice, millet, barley, oats. I'm telling you right now that these grains are not necessarily good for us. And especially when under stress. So you think, well, what do you eat? Well, you eat meats, fruits, and vegetables, okay? And you can have eggs, okay? And those of us who aren't allergic to dairy can have, you know, non-fat, you know, whether it's just sugar-free yogurts and stuff like that, and you can mix some raisins or whatever, but you have to be very, very careful with what you eat because you're fueling your body, and if you're putting in defective fuel, it's kind of like putting, you know, orange juice in a gas tank of a car. It's just going to just mess everything up. And you have an engine inside of you, a metabolic engine. If you don't take care of it, you're really going to be in trouble. Limit fruits. I like fruits, organic fruits, but for some families and for some individuals, again, fruits are a great source of sugar. So let's not do that. You can salt your food. So everybody talks about salt being bad. That's a carryover from the 70s. And I like Himalayan pink salt. I like the Mind salts. And they provide lots more than just sodium chloride, but they have iodine chloride, potassium chloride, and they won't contribute to a blood pressure problem. And if your adrenal gland hasn't been working right, you may be peeing out excessive salts, and your body's craving salt, and that's why some of you might be craving salt, so it's okay. Avoid chocolate, but if you have significant cravings, it might be because you need magnesium. Your body knows where it gets magnesium. It gets it from chocolate. But chocolate is processed, and there's a lot of sugar in there, unless, of course, you're eating 85%, you know, lint chocolate, you know, cocoa, which isn't so tasty, but it's a nice alternative if you need to have something. Okay, so we're going to talk about some biomedical interventions. We talked a little bit about changing foods. I can't stress enough how important food choices are for you. Now trying to get in bed before 10:30 and asleep in 10 to 15 minutes. Now, if you've got panic, if you've got anxiety, that's not so easy. So melatonin, 1/2 to 1 milligram 30 minutes before bedtime. That's why I put all my notes here that you're reading, but sometimes we need to have much bigger doses of melatonin. Okay, your bodies are messed up, and you can't go to sleep, and you may need 3 milligrams slow release, 6 milligrams. Okay, but again, if it's good if you're working with a practitioner who knows how to manage this, but sleep is really important. I know my wife was telling me if I can just get 8 hours of unadulterated sleep, I can put up just about anything this kid can throw at me, you know, during the day. But if my wife had to wake up several times through the night, I mean, she was shot. And you know, worldwide, if you look at torture, the number one torture is still sleep deprivation, and many of you guys have sleep deprivation. So it's very important to get a good night's rest. So if the melatonin isn't working, then I continue that, but I stack on top of it a supplement called 5-hydroxytryptophan. And I do about 100 milligrams, but I've used up to 300 or 400 milligrams. And calcium citrate, very important to add calcium there. And if you're still not able to sleep, you can get some over-the-counter at the food store, adrenal extracts, and take a half an hour before sleep. And each one is different. And again, I'm talking to a very large audience from all around the country, maybe the world. So you have to kind of, I can't give you the exact dosing because I don't know which particular product you're going to get. If you're still not able to sleep, then you can try somewhere between 1 and 4 tablets of a hypothalamus extract with maybe 10 to 40 milligrams of manganese, which is different than magnesium. And I'm sorry, they named them so similar, but it is different. And that can help our families. And then I have one gentleman right now. I actually had him on, you know, a sleep medication, prescription sleep medication, because he just couldn't sleep. So even though sometimes we got to keep in mind that sometimes, even though we don't want to, I have to reach into my MD tool chest and get a real prescription medication. I don't like doing it. I try to like to do all the natural stuff first. I will give him 2 or 3 weeks of good sleep, and then I'll start weaning them off of that sleep medication because it's a Band-Aid. Now, very often out there, practitioners will say, well, we've got something for you. It's Ambien or whatever, and they'll leave you on that, and that's not good. It's a great Band-Aid. It just makes life so much better when you wake up in the morning refreshed and you can breathe again and you can live again, but it's not something that I want to continue. I'd like to depend more on natural things that you can take for extended amount of time. Vitamin C, probably one of the most important vitamins. The adrenal gland just gobbles this one up. Most of the vitamin C that you consume will be diverted to the adrenal gland. And the body can't make vitamin C. And vitamin C, as we know, a lot of it comes from citrus. But we've gotten out of the habit of eating fresh fruits, fresh citrus. It takes too much time to peel one of those little oranges, okay, or a clementine. It just takes too much time. It's just easier to just grab something else. Go on vitamin C. And then there's this, you know, docs tend to work things out and they come up with ratios. And if you can find something that's got a good ratio of what's called bioflavonoids, 2 to 1, and I gave you a little illustration there, that'd be great. You know, 500 milligrams with 250 milligrams of bioflavonoids 3 times a day might be good for you. You might need to take 2-3 times a day. Might need more. Just depends on how badly depleted you've been. Become through this whole process. Vitamin E is indirectly required. In other words, vitamin C is directly required. Vitamin E is so important. It just kind of helps with neutralizing free radicals generated by the production of the adrenal hormone. So it just keeps that. It basically goes around and picks up the garbage at the factory. And if the garbage grows and gets too big, then it gets in the aisleways and clogs everything. So it's good to be on that. And then there are, of course, different forms of it, so I kind of wrote down in there what kind of form might be beneficial for you. The vitamin E actually is a good blood thinner. So if you have thin blood, or if you're on a blood thinner, then you probably want to be watched very carefully or use much smaller doses. And your omega oils can do that too, by the way, your fish oils and things like that. And I guess one of the first signs is if when you blow your nose, if you see a little bit of blood in the mucus, that means your blood is getting a little too thin. You might want to back down a little bit on the omega oils. Pantothenic acid, B5, very, very important for the production of energy when combined with magnesium and vitamin E and C. Kind of see how they work together? You know, we talk about this kind of like little squares in a waffle, but these things are all interrelated, like a plate of spaghetti and meatballs, okay? So you start taking a little magnesium that works with the vitamin E, it works with the C, and look, it takes much of the fatigue out of the adrenal glands without overstimulating them. So when you put it all together, what you're trying to do, again, like I said in the beginning, we're trying to get those adrenal glands to start working again the way they were meant to work. Niacin is very important to the adrenal function. Niacin is another B vitamin. But if you just take plain niacin, in some people, it'll cause you to flush, facial flushing. Your cheeks get bright red, your ears get bright red, your neck can get bright red. And it's kind of an uncomfortable feeling as I've tried different niacins myself, or my wife has tried some of mine. It's like, whoa, this one makes you feel really hot. So there are forms of flush-free niacin available, such as the inositol. And you could take 500, 600 milligrams per day, a little less to start with, but that can be very helpful. So niacin is important for the adrenal function. B6, very, very important. It's a cofactor in the normal function of the adrenal gland. And one of the things I was reading as I was preparing for this, it seems that people dream when they take B6. So if you're not dreaming, that might be a sign that you're B6 deficient. B6 in the form of P5P, which is the activated form of B6, and this is a vitamin, 50 milligrams per day is usually recommended for adults. The B-complex, I had several women last week say it was the B-complex that did it for me. The B6, B3, and B12. And you're not going to find these ratios. That'd be too easy. So you're going to have to find something that's kind of similar to this. That's why I gave you ranges here. And you may find you have to take 3 capsules a day or 4 capsules a day to get these levels. And that's okay. And then there's some natural forms, ones out there that are all natural, and they'll be much lower. But it's okay. You don't have to get to these levels that I put in the first 3, the 50 to 100 milligrams of B6. You may be fine with 25 milligrams of B6 in the natural form. It's more easily absorbed by the body. Okay. Magnesium. I can't tell you how important magnesium is for the normal functioning of not only the adrenal gland, but it tends to be very, very calming. It helps with restless legs, so does calcium. In my practice, I've seen that really help. So magnesium is important. Too much magnesium, and you're going to have loose stools. So you have to be careful with the dosing on this. And I tend to recommend magnesium citrate, 400 milligrams a day for many of my patients. Sounds like a lot of stuff. You know, you have to put it all in a big cup. We have these little cups we, you know, make in the morning and throw in our vitamin D and all the things that we are doing and for the kids, and because there's a lot of things. But if it helps us function better, I think it's a whole lot better than taking, you know, something like Prozac. Calcium tends to have a very calming effect throughout the nervous system. And a lot of us feel that we get enough calcium in the dairy foods that we eat. There's some concern that once you pasteurize dairy, pasteurized milk, pasteurized cheese, the calcium that's remaining is poorly absorbed. So we may not be getting as much calcium from those products as we think. And other places to get calcium, say broccoli, well, we tend not to eat so much fresh steamed broccoli that's been organically grown. So there's a good reason for why we may want to add calcium to our body. Adults typically need about 750 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams per day. Calcium citrate, calcium lactate seem to be the better forms. Everybody out there is waving their arms saying, we have the best form. It's derived from coral, and our form is from here and there. so far, you know, the research tends to show that the calcium citrate, calcium lactate seem to be the better forms. And it's okay, though. I mean, if you want to take the coral calcium, if you've done the research and you feel that's what you want, or your practitioner says that's what you want, that's fine, as long as you're getting some. Very, very important for all of us, especially women, as women can only make deposits in their calcium bank up until they go into menopause. And then it's very hard to put calcium into bone tissue after menopause. And then from the rest of your life after that, you're making withdrawals. So kind of like a retirement account, you want to put as much calcium in there as you can. But not too much, because then you get into these people who talk about hypercalcium, but that can also then form calcium stones, you know, and renal stones. So you don't want to, remember, when you do things, if some is good, more is better. Keep in mind, not with what we're doing here, not with these balances that I'm trying to help reestablish in the body. More is not necessarily better. Phosphatidylserine, some parents will call that PS, phosphatidylserine, can lower elevated cortisols. And again, when you measure cortisol levels by this saliva, the spit test that I talked about earlier, instead of having no cortisol production, some women have really high productions of cortisol. It's like when I did my wife's, it was really high. And it's like, gosh, I was expecting it to be crashed, but her adrenal glands were, you know, on overload and just cranking it. And you want to bring it down. You want to bring it down into normal range. Because, again, like I told you, balance is really important. So too much of one thing or too little of something is not good. Here you can have an excess of cortisol, and you think, well, gee, if you have too much cortisol, then you're going to be really mellow. And that's not the case. You're going to be fried just the same as if you had none. And I see that in my clinic all the time. So phosphatidylserine can lower elevated cortisol. It enhances nutrient entry into the cells and waste exiting the cells. So it, again, gets the cells working better. It facilitates transmission of molecular information, and often recommended 800 milligrams daily, sometimes a little more, sometimes less. But again, it's very important if you have super high levels of cortisol. Trace minerals, chromium, copper, iodine, manganese, molybdenum, selenium, and zinc. Small amounts are needed. There's folks that are making the trace minerals in a little liquid, you know, dropper amount, and those are fine. I like those. They're easy to absorb, but try to avoid those that are labeled colloidal. Bowel movements. Oh, so very important to get those bowels working every day. I can't tell you how many times, not only the kids, but the parents, you know, they'll have two bowel movements a week and think that was normal. But really what you're aiming for is 1 to 2 bowel movements a day. And by doing that, then the gallbladder is able to drain itself where all the toxins go from the liver. So you actually start liver detoxification by removing waste material from your colon, and that's having 1 or 2 soft stools a day. And to help that, we try to add some fiber. Fiber, I like the soluble form, and it's very important, and it's quite common to be constipated when the adrenals are fatigued, and definitely when you're not getting enough fiber, like from plant material. So like I said, many of us don't have good diets. We're not eating natural fiber. And or we need additional fiber because genetically we're not the greatest movers of our bowels. So fiber is really helpful for that. But it's very important to move your bowels daily, twice daily would be great, and that helps your liver start the process of its own repair and detoxification. So what are the 5 best herbs that one can take to help with feeling, the feelings of stress, the feelings of I don't like the way I'm feeling inside, I got the jitters, I just feel like I've had too much coffee, I don't feel comfortable, I'm feeling a thumping in my chest. We'll talk about each one of these, but licorice root, not licorice candy, guys, licorice root, ashwagandha root and leaf, Siberian ginseng, ginger root, and ginkgo leaf. So the licorice root, anti-stress herb known to increase energy, endurance, and vitality, and it fortifies cortisone. Cortisone comes from cortisol. Cortisol comes from the adrenal glands. It's what helps you manage your stress. And maybe you've heard of people who get, like, cortisone injections into, you know, inflamed joints. Our body makes its own cortisone from cortisol. And that's why a lot of people start aching when they're under stress. They're not generating enough cortisol, and therefore the body can't convert that cortisol to cortisone, so it can go to places that are inflamed and basically put water on the fire. Stabilizes blood sugars. By not eating so much of your, and this goes back to the diet again, all of those processed foods, all of those grains that drive your blood sugar up, and then it crashes down, and then up and down, and which makes some folks very irritable. This stabilizes blood sugars. You can get it in teas, and some people actually like it. You're not going to be able to get a child with special needs to drink licorice tea. But it's also, fortunately for us who don't want to drink licorice tea, available in 450 milligram capsules. You take one cap once or twice daily. There are some people who are pretty sensitive to licorice, and it can actually elevate their blood pressure. So a lot of folks will get those blood pressure cuffs that you can buy now at your local pharmacies. They like go on your wrist. You can actually start tracking your own blood pressures. They're very darn accurate. So it's a good way to do that. But there are a few people who, when they drink licorice, it can elevate their blood pressure. Now let's look at ashwagandha. That happens to be one of my favorite ones, especially in the kids too. It's not, herbs tend to taste very bad, and that's why the herbs are very pungent, very strong in their flavor. We use herbs in cooking, but giving a special needs kid herbs on the tongue in a form of a tincture or in a powder is not usually well received. But for us folks who can swallow pills, it's not bad at all. Ashwagandha usually comes in 125 milligram capsules. You can take one capsule twice a day if needed. It's been used for a long time to decrease inflammation, and bottom line, it's an adaptogen. Let's talk a little bit about adaptogens, coming from the word adapt, meaning that if, like, again, in the case of cortisol, if you're too low in cortisol production, this will help you adapt and move it up and get into the normal range. If you're making too much cortisol in response to the stress that you're feeling in your life, it'll help you adapt and bring it down. So it's an adaptogen. So if you're too high or you're too low, without even testing, you know you could start taking ashwagandha. Okay? Very good, very safe, and very few potential side effects. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the Siberian ginseng root. This supports and rejuvenates adrenal function, which is all about. And you have to understand that when we talk about supplements, you get these terms like supports and rejuvenates because the FDA doesn't allow us to say anything otherwise, okay? So you get these like nebulous comments, but that's all that can be said, and that's just basically all the restrictions and requirements made by the FDA. So, but I do use this in my practice, and it increases resistance to stress. You become a little more bulletproof, counteracts mental fatigue, and again, I can't tell you how many parents I have who are just mentally tired. It increases and sustains energy levels, stamina, and endurance, and it helps with anxiousness. So if part of your adrenal fatigue is anxiety, this can help with that. And it improves sleep. And that's another big problem, like I keep mentioning over and again, is sleep. The Siberian ginseng root also improves disease resistance, especially when I have a mom or dad saying, "Man, I seem to get every cold that's out there. No sooner do I get over one cold, I get the next, and the doctor has to put me on an antibiotic because it went into a sinus infection or whatever." Normalizing blood sugar. Again, you can really help by normalizing blood sugar by getting all the grains out of your diet and just eating meats, fruits, and vegetables, skipping the potatoes, the rice, the corn. I know it's a big deal, but we're fighting for your life right now because you can't go down. It's very important to have both parents really able to do the most they can, or especially a single mom. I mean, she's doing 3 drops a day anyway. It stimulates antibodies to bacteria and viruses, and there's a good product called Cybergen 500 upon awakening, and it's right there, very few side effects. Ginger root. It's another adaptogen that can modulate the cortisol levels. Very important, again, to work. Now, remember, these can work together. These aren't one or the other. You can stack these. It's better if you're working with a practitioner who's adept at managing and recognizing and treating stress and anxiety and the sleep issues, mental fatigue, lack of mental clarity, lack of mental energy. That's why it's important to find somebody. But what I'm trying to present to you is that what you're feeling has a name, and what you're feeling has treatments. There's some things that you can start on your own, okay, like the diet, like the exercising if you can, if you have time, and like some of these simpler steps. This is an adaptogen also that helps bring down or bring up cortisol levels to a more normal level that your body requires, increases energy and metabolic rate, decreases lethargy or tiredness, especially if you're convalescing from an illness. And they usually can find them in 250 milligram caps just one in the morning. What if your ginger root that you got at your store is 275 or 290 milligram caps? It's fine. These are extracts. These are just herbs, so a little more, a little less. These are just ballpark figures for you. Ginkgo biloba. Oh, I use that. I even use that in my Down syndrome children to get them speaking. I mean, ginkgo biloba is just amazing as an antioxidant for the brain. It protects the adrenal glands, the liver, from oxidative stress. And 120 milligrams once daily. Sometimes I actually put people on it twice a day. It just works. I mean, it's really good. Again, very, very safe. Adrenal cortical extracts. Again, these are things that you can buy at the better health food stores. If you're working with a practitioner, they usually have a company or two like Metagenics or maybe Life Extension or one of these other companies that they prefer to use. Not necessarily because they're better, but they're used to the product and used to the results that they're getting. These are not replacement hormones, which in severe cases I might actually have to put you on, or a physician actually has to put you on a hormone, the cortisol itself. I try not to, but these can help, again, move the adrenal gland into a more normal functioning mode. Cortisol, by the way, just so you know, is a hormone, just like thyroid is a hormone. If you're low on thyroid, I give you thyroid. If you're low on insulin, I give you insulin. If you're low on cortisol, and I can't get the adrenal gland to make it, we can actually give you short-term a little bit of cortisol. It's called hydrocortisone. Hydrocortisone is cortisol. So we have it. It's readily available. It's prescription, though. Definitely has to be monitored and definitely needs to be administered by somebody who knows what they're doing with it. But, you know, I could probably put in 20 patients with this, maybe one on a short course of 2 months of hydrocortisone because it is not responding the way I want to see them respond. But anyway, the adrenal cortical extracts, their dosing depends on the product that you get. So I can't quite tell you that. So there are other issues involved with the adrenal gland, is all the slides I have for you today. But let's kind of recap, and then we'll take questions because I know there's going to be a lot of questions out there. These adrenal glands sit on top of your kidneys. They probably make over 100 different hormones. I mean, they even, for women, make testosterone. That's where women's testosterone comes from. And we've heard adrenaline that comes from the adrenal glands, and that's your fight-or-flight hormone. And we know cortisol, because that's what we've been talking about for the last 45 minutes. The cortisol comes from the adrenal gland, and when the adrenal gland can't make enough, then you are more susceptible to feeling the stress issues that you're being exposed to. And the body's stress issues present with altered sleep, altered mental clarity, altered total body energy, salt craving, and the list goes on, and then you feel tight-chested, can't breathe, and on it goes. We can't do too much about the stress. I mean, that's, again, the job of the physicians working with the child or the factors that are in your life. But how can we resuscitate your body's response to stress so you can feel great again? You know, yeah, I got special needs kid, but I feel great. It's not a problem. We can deal with it. That's what we want to get you all back. And then I went over some ways that we can naturally help your body restore the cortisol production and help you feel back to where you were. I tell our kid families, the parents, you know, like the women to feel like they're 18 or 19 again. Yeah, they might be in a 30-year-old body, but they feel 18 or 19. They feel hope. They feel mental clarity. They're studying again. They're remembering things, and they've just got a spark of life back in them. So I think it'd be a good time now to open up to questions, and let's see what you guys want to share.
Okay, those who are calling, listening in through their phones, you can press star 2 if you'd like to ask a question, and that'll alert me that you have your hand up. I think there may be a problem with our link to the website questions because we weren't getting very many, but another one has just come through. Before I get to that one, I did want to ask for my own self. I know that you treat a lot of individuals with special needs, but I was curious as to whether you automatically address the whole family or if somebody would have to come to you and say, you know, I'm stressed out, I can't handle this. Do you automatically just?
I do, just because I'm sensitive to it. You know, my wife had a real rough time with this early on, and I just tend to want to make sure that the best success I can have with the child is making sure that if I have a mom and dad still together, that I can get them both functioning at a much higher level. You know, if I get them working, then I have a better chance of getting the child figured out and resuscitated. So it's very important for me because it's a long haul. It's a marathon when you have a special needs kid. And like I said, it's the show that never seems to end here. So, yes, I always address that. I always take time, especially in the first appointment or two, because, you know, everybody comes in, they're excited to see me, and they're dressed up, and they've got their makeup on, and they're, you know, really alert and everything. And as soon as they say, how are you doing, and I see tears welling up in the eyes, and then I know that, boy, they can't even handle a how are you doing kind of a mode. So things are pretty difficult. And then, of course, hearing about the kid, I'm going to be less worried about a mom who's got one of those high-functioning children. They, you know, they call them, I think, Asperger's or something like that. And the kid's sleeping great, and he's potty trained, and he's just wonderful. He's just a little socially inappropriate, and he's, you know, got some problems with you know, food allergies or whatever. And of course, they're going to do better than the kid who's up, you know, who sleeps 1 hour, up for two, sleeps 20 minutes, up for two more hours. I don't even have to ask that question. I know they've got to be stressed because unless they come from a different planet, they're just going to be wiped out. But I do address it, and, you know, we take care of it. We manage it.
Mm-hmm. So those of us who have DAN doctors or specialists for our kids, maybe we should be asking them to test us as well?
Well, certainly.
If I take this list of stuff to my regular physician, she's going to say, what?
You're absolutely right, and even the DAN doctors don't necessarily address this. Many doctors haven't gotten on to the endocrine. I've been blessed with a son who's just about had every complication you can have except for seizures, but I mean from insulin-dependent diabetes to Hashimoto's thyroiditis to Sherman's disease of the spine, and I mean I've learned so much from my boy. He just continues to be my teacher, and I continue to be his student. But if you haven't been exposed to that, a DAN doctor nowadays has so much to learn. I've been doing this for, you know, a decade and a half just with autism. A DAN doctor has so much to learn that he's just trying to get through the basics about treating fungal infections in the bowels and what are the right probiotics and all that. He hasn't even gotten into, you know, the deeper stuff. So sometimes you can ask them, and if they don't feel comfortable treating adults, then they might be able to make a referral to somebody who specializes in managing this.
Mm-hmm. And another concern of mine is, you know, all this is great, but how am I supposed to afford it, first of all, when I'm trying to do all this for my own child? How can I justify in my own mind, you know, everyone being on medication? Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, and that is a problem. Like, how do I find, you know, does that mean I have to see another doctor, and do I have to pay for that too? And it's certainly not, like you said, certainly not recognized by mainstream medicine. If money is that tight, then, and this may sound a little bit harsh, but then you might just have to use the medication that your local family practice doctor wants to put you on because you can't afford $100 more of these things that we talked about. Vitamin C, thank God, is cheap, and you can go on vitamin C. And some of these things are relatively inexpensive that we talked about. But if you're at a point where you don't, you know, seriously, I've had in my practice two moms commit suicide.
Mm.
okay? And so we're talking about a very serious problem. Now, what money was worth them not?
Right.
If that could have just been picked up beforehand. So that's a very big issue. Or what price do you put on a relationship where mom or dad is so strung out with anxiety, they just say, look, I just can't do this anymore. I'm out of here. And now you got a single parent trying to do all this, mom or dad. So it sometimes, you know, again, I've had parents where I can't afford all of this. My kid's got crippling ADD. Can't you just put them on Strattera? Oh, man, I really would like not to. But if that's all we can do, if that's what you're limited to, then let's do it. And let's see if we can get this kid's academic monster machine growing again. And all of a sudden these kids start, you know, doing well in school. Yeah, they're on Strattera, but mom's got $10 copay or Ritalin or one of those drugs. I don't like using Ritalin, but just so the audience understands what I'm talking about. Then okay. But something is better than nothing. And we've got to just be very mindful about what we can do. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. When I have a parent who says, look, we're at the end of our supplement list here. This is the amount of disposable income we have for supplements. We can't go above this, but I need something. What would you recommend? I say, well, can you do $10 more for a copay at, you know, CVS and we'll get you something? That I can do. Good. How do you feel 2 weeks later? So much better. I just like it. It's like a giant weight's lifted off. But then I've helped that family too. So we can be very sensitive to that aspect as well. But the main point is that something needs to be done. It doesn't have to be this giant ball and chain you drag around for the rest of your life, but something could be done.
Mm-hmm. Carrie from Dayton asks, my 4-year-old is PDD-NOS. They have put him on Risperdal. Opinions of the drug for a child that young?
Oh, you know, again, here, that's a great question. So now we're gonna move out of stress and just talk about general questions like autism and all, which is great with me. I have no problem with that. So Risperdal, I consider as a great Band-Aid. If somebody was thinking of Risperdal for a 4-year-old, that kid must have been just totally out of control, just totally something violent, not sleeping, stimming, obsessive, compulsive, whatever. Now, if I use a drug like Risperdal, like I said earlier, when I have to reach into my MD tool chest and pull out something, I try to tell the parents it's a 3-month or 6-month Band-Aid. Let's go ahead and put the kid on Risperdal so everybody can breathe easier. It's working, thank God, and the child's much, much better. I mean, the kid better be doing better, too. I mean, if you got a kid on Risperdal or Prozac, by golly, that kid better be doing good, okay? Then we have to look and say, what incarnations can we do right, whether it be treating yeast or constipation or whatever, and so we can get them off of it. Now, like, for example, the youngest child I've ever had on a drug like that was an 18-month-old on Prozac. 18-month-old on Prozac. They came to me on Prozac.
Wow.
And this was one vicious 18-month-old. I mean, this kid, oh, my gosh, mom and grandma came in, and the kid had clawed and bitten both mom and grandma. I mean, there were bite marks and bruises and scratch marks on their face, cheeks. This was Sid Vicious in persona. I mean, this kid was awful. And he was on Prozac, the youngest kid I've ever seen on Prozac. And I took an X-ray of his belly, and oh, my gosh, he was full of stool, FOS, full of stool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really impacted. And I think the impaction was hurting that he was just lashing out in agony. It took me about 3 weeks. I almost had to have him put in the hospital to disimpact his bowels. He was very close to a surgical disimpaction. And I thought I was going to have to. And it's like, you know, man, if this doesn't happen by tomorrow, I don't feel comfortable with this. He blew. It was like a gusher. This kid pooped for the next 3 days. I mean, and he was the sweetest, sweetest kid afterwards. Like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. He felt so good. I can run off of his Prozac.
Mm.
But if we can find out why they need it, if it's fungus, if it's yeast, if it's bacteria, if it's constipation, diarrhea, if they've got reflux, esophagitis, reflux in the swallowing pipe, that hurts. If you ever were pregnant and reflux during your pregnancy, you know it's very uncomfortable. And these kids can reflux if they're dairy allergic, if this kid's on gluten. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. So Risperdal in itself for this age group, it's not my favorite. I'd prefer not to. It's a great stabilizing agent, but we better be trying to figure out why that child needs it in the first place so we can get them off.
Mm-hmm.
That's my short answer.
Rachel from Lexington had the same exact question I posed to you was, you know, can afford the supplements for herself and the child. But tacking on to her question, I would ask, what if you were on a limited budget, what of these recommendations would you start with? What would you say would be number
the
one
cheapest,
stress reliever and cheapest?
The cheapest would be ashwagandha. And if you go online, it's really cheap. I think it's like $8.99 or something like that. Vitamin C. Very, very important no matter where we go with this. Valerian root extract if you're having panic and anxiety. Valerian root extract. Really cool stuff. Again, I think it's about $12. So there's some interesting things that we can do herbally that can at least be nice patches for you. But vitamin C is very important. And I'm going to say it again. I mean, everybody in this audience is going to know, and I don't know who you are in Lexington, but get off the processed foods. Stop the dairy. Stop all grains. Now, you can add dairy back later once you start feeling good. Get off of all your grains. Get off of your sodas. You know, the soda thing, and again, I don't know who I'm talking to out in Lexington or whatever, but when I was doing general pediatrics, especially when I was in the South in Biloxi, Mississippi, when I was with the Air Force, some of these families would put Mountain Dew in the baby bottles at 8 months, 9 months of age. You know, and they were proud that their baby was drinking soda.
Wow.
So we got to think of different cultures and different climates around the world. I take care of families from all around the world that fly in and see me. So I'm just saying that please, please, please clean up the food. Just remove the, I'll say it, crap. Just remove it, okay? These kids are not going to benefit from it, and us as parents are going to benefit from it. And I have not yet had a parent yet who removed all grains from their diet, all grains. They were just basically eating meats, fruits, and vegetables and didn't start losing weight. Not because they weren't eating. I mean, they were eating fine. I mean, they were eating hamburgers and they were eating, you know, chicken and stuff like that. They just weren't eating potatoes or french fries or bread, and they lost weight. And after about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks of craving bread, craving these grains, then all of a sudden they felt liberated. They didn't eat as much. They weren't as hungry, and they felt better. So very, very important for you to consider dietary changes, which don't cost you anything because you're taking away food, okay, and ashwagandha, valerian root extract, vitamin C, that's a good place to start.
Okay. Had another question come in. She says, this is a little off topic, but a great source of stress for her.
Okay.
Okay. We're talking about stress. Every mainstream doctor we see always asks without fail if our children's vaccines are up to date. I have gone to say that they are delayed because I was so afraid of being turned into social services because I don't want to damage my child further. I've been kicked out of 3 pediatricians' offices in 5 years for not vaccinating.
Okay. First of all, there is a great book out there that I want everybody to get who's interested in vaccines. And it's written by Mayer Eisenstein. And it's called How to Make an Informed Vaccine Decision. How to Make an Informed Vaccine Decision. And you can get it at Amazon.com. Mayer Eisenstein. And this will give you the whys and wherefores and concerns or no concerns about certain vaccines. So you have to really think about, do I really have to worry about polio? Or what about this whooping cough? There's an epidemic. Or what about this? You can read about the diseases, and then you could say, after reading that, now I'm informed. I don't need to do this. Okay, whatever this is. Like, for example, hepatitis B at birth. You know, that's for a sexually transmitted disease. And most of our kids, even in Lexington, aren't going to be sexually active for at least the first decade of their life, right? So maybe we don't have to do hepatitis B. So that's number one. Make an informed decision. So read about it. And the best book I've read, and I find, you know, there's a lot of good vaccine books out there. Most of them put me to sleep. But this book I read cover to cover. It was well written. Mayer is a pediatrician. He's an attorney, and he's got a master's in public health. He's got a pediatric practice in Chicago. And he has 20,000 unvaccinated children in his practice, even in the autism. So it's some interesting points there. Now, the next thing you have to think about is pediatricians can be rather arrogant. family practice doctors are much, much better about that. So since you've been fighting this for 5 years, that means your kids are bigger. You're not talking about 6-week-olds or 8-week-olds. So maybe we don't have to do pediatrician and go to a family practice. Tend to be a little bit more tolerant about different people's belief systems. And I don't quite understand it. I mean, you know, when I was a young pediatrician, I had people come out of the hills and say, we don't vaccinate our children. This was long before, you know, I mean, I was vaccinating my kids. I mean, it was, you know. And I said, well, I respect your decision as a parent. I support your decision as a parent 100%. I might disagree with your decision here. But just keep me in the loop if you get a penetrating injury into the foot or something, because your child's not vaccinated against tetanus, and we need to do some things differently, perhaps. And not only did I get the respect, but it's better patient care, because if something happens to that child, if whooping cough is going around and the child starts coughing, I know he's not vaccinated, I'm going to think, whooping cough, I'm going to put him on azithromycin, a Z-Pack. I mean, really? I mean, that's what whooping cough is all about. You know, you can get sick from it, don't get me wrong, but you can get sick from any disease out there. So stand by your guns, make yourself really informed, how to make an informed vaccine decision, and then maybe find a family practice doctor who's a little bit more tolerant, and we'll see how you do there.
Very good. Anna from Bayside asks, what did you say about anxiety, and what should a 12-year-old child take, what to do for his attention and focus?
I didn't, Anna. That's a whole different topic, Anna. that's huge. Okay, I mean, like, you just asked how I practice medicine with these kids, but what I was saying is that many of our kids on the spectrum, they too, now we were talking about adults here tonight, I was asked to talk about adults and stress and being in the pressure cooker with these special needs kids, especially 12-year-old girls. Are you kidding? I have four boys, and people say, you can try for a girl. I said, no, why would I want to ruin my life? These girls are tough out there. So anyway, you have a child who's got anxiety, a child who's got problems with focus and concentration. If you go to my website, AnnaMendingAutism.com, you can read about my approach to ADD and hyperactivity, and you can read my approach to anxiety. And then you can take a look at that, maybe go and see your physician about some of these things. That's the best way to do it. But I know nothing about her. I don't know if she's eating sugar all day long. I don't know what her sleep is like. I don't know what her stooling is like. I don't know if she's got eczema, if she's got asthma, if she's been on lots of antibiotics for ear infections. Can she have a parasite going? So there's a lot of causes for those. So I always look for that. I don't see anxiety and stress as just pure disorders. Usually something is tipping them in that direction, and we can fix that.
So your website again is mendingautism.com?
Yeah, it's a totally free website. There's nothing flashing on you to buy this or buy that. Mm-hmm. It's just plain information for everyone around the world just to click in and say, how does Dr. Carcinelle approach this, that, and another thing? And I try to write articles. I just wrote an article. It's in the Proofing now on stimming behavior and what stimming is caused from, how can we ameliorate stimming, how can we make it better. ADD, problems with gluten, dairy, just lots of little articles there that I've written, and she's welcome to take a peek at that, or all of you guys are.
You had mentioned trace minerals liquid, but you said do not use a colloidal, and I was curious, what's wrong with the colloidals?
Well, it just seems that the colloidal materials, in my experience, don't seem to be as well absorbed. And that's just my experience. You got other people jumping up and down. I know that when I use, for example, hydrated silver to kill, I use that very often as a natural antibiotic, if you will, hydrated silver. If you let silver accumulate in the body, you can get what's called blue man syndrome. You know, then you have to work in Las Vegas for the rest of your life. But you can actually, your skin can actually turn blue. Okay, and so colloidal silver will get stored in your body. But hydrated silver comes in, does its job, and then washes out. So I think that many of our minerals that we want to use will do better if they're not attached to a protein, and that's colloidal. But that's my experience, so that's why I said to try to stay away from that.
Oh, okay. How many times do you find that the parents are heavy metal toxic when you test them? Is it a high percentage?
Well, it depends on where they're coming from. Remember, I've got people from all over the world. So if I have a family that's coming from Jakarta, Indonesia, you know they're going to be heavy metal toxic because they live in a lead plume. If I've got somebody who's coming from Kuwait and was there after Saddam lit the oil fields on fire and they didn't see, I kid you not, guys, this is not a metaphor, they did not see the sun for a year. They had so much, if you will, smog or this thick petroleum haze, they couldn't even see the sun for a year. They have a lot of toxins in their bodies. If I have somebody, so it depends on where you live. So if you're downstream from a coal plant, then you might have some more mercury issues that we might have to deal with. So it's a case-by-case history. If I have somebody who is a welder or a solderer, then I'm going to think more, especially if they've been doing it for 20 years, I'm going to think more of, you know, lead perhaps. Mm-hmm. So there's different people, but it's not uncommon. And then you can go and look at, say, I'll use my wife as an example, who was Rh negative and got Rogam shots that had thimerosal, which is mercury, had a mouthful of amalgams, and thank God she didn't like fish, so she didn't eat a lot of fish. And when I finally figured out what to do and tested her for mercury, for heavy metals, mercury, she didn't have any. And so either they were a problem and her body finally got rid of them, or they weren't a problem that she was able to, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, I played with mercury as part of my chemistry set. I played with liquid, a big bottle of mercury. I used to do my own soldering, which was lead solder back then. So I was inhaling lead, tin, you know. So some of us have the ability to detoxify. And I think what we're finding really quickly is those kids, especially with vaccines and all, who don't have the ability to detoxify. That's why my large group of kids still are okay with vaccines, and a small group of kids, which is getting bigger every day, are fine. But you guys heard that the Mind Institute said it's just large women having babies that's giving autism. So once again, it's the mother's fault. That's that new study looking at obese women having babies and having a greater percentage of. So once again, it's a woman's fault. So it's a good thing to be tested if you think that you are at high risk.
Okay. Now, I know I'm not unique in this because I talk to a lot of autism mommies, but I'm in putting out the fire mode. I am not proactive in my own health. I am not thinking about what I'm putting into my body. I am eating on the fly. I am running on caffeine, and I am surviving. I'm in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
It would take me a whole weekend probably to just revamp everything I'm doing and take care of me for a change. But that's not where I am right this minute. Right this minute, I am just survival mode, just getting from one meltdown to the next meltdown. And if I get through the meltdown, I reward myself.
Right.
And I know I'm not unique. I know this is the norm. So how do we change our mindset and to realize that, like you said, we need to put the oxygen mask on ourselves first?
Well, certain things, you know, that's a very good point. In fact, we don't tend to make changes until we have to.
Mm-hmm.
When the ambulance is taking you to the hospital emergency room because you're having chest pains, not from a heart attack, but from a panic attack. And once... Or if your husband comes in and finds you in the fetal position and you can't move and you've got three kids at your side, then that's when we can definitely need to intervene. So, again, there are different levels of operation. And like you're saying right now, many women, I call it living at the level of a reptile, you know, just making it through each day one foot in front of the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine if it's working for you. I mean, if it's working for you, then you don't have to intervene. If you're saying, I can't keep doing this, something's got to change, that's the next level, okay? So where you're at, what you describe, is a lot of folks who are under stress, but it's compensated. You're compensating. You're living on vitamin C and caffeine. Almost sounded like an old song. But when you get into decompensated stress, where you're no longer sleeping, where you're becoming irritable, where you're screaming at your spouse or your kids, where you're making life for your neurotypical kids a living hell, that's when you say, hey, this has got to stop and I got to take care of me because I'm just going to implode. So I'd love to be able to get the word out where you'd say, you know, that sounds like me. I think we can do something here and start fixing it. But you're right, a lot of moms can't or they won't because they're just trying to make it through each day and they don't have a spare minute to think about themselves. But what I tried to lay out today was this smorgasbord that if you get into a more of a decompensated mode, you don't like your 180-pound frame, you don't like not being able to sleep, you don't like feeling grumpy every day, you don't like not being able to read or remember anything, then you know at least you heard once, there's something that can help all this. And I think that's important that you know it. If you don't need it, then you don't need it. I mean, that's a good thing. Because, again, like you said, some women can stay in a compensated stress mode and survive and get their kids, you know, into high school and all. But a lot of moms crash, you know, between 1 and 2 years after the diagnosis. They can go on for so long, and then they go belly up at that point.
It's almost like a martyr syndrome or a badge of honor to just barely survive this. I'm saying, you know, we're almost bragging to each other how much we're sacrificing and how much we don't take care of ourselves, how much we do for our child.
Okay, and there are different things that we do that we think that if we suffer a little bit more, or if we wash a little bit more, or if we clean the kid a little bit more, then we'll pay our dues and the child will recover. And again, that's another way that we've tried to manage it, that if I pour out my life just for the kid and everything I do is just for the child and suffer more, then somehow it's all good. And is that a healthy or non-healthy way of thinking about these kids? Now, here's where I differ from the moms. I'm a guy. Mm-hmm. And I had one mom tell me, you don't know what it's like to have an autistic kid like this. I said, absolutely, I do. I've got one. She looked at me, and then she goes, she squints her eyes like only women can do. But you don't know what it's like to be a woman and have an autistic kid. And that I had to concede the point to. You're right, I'll never know that. Females tend to process information differently than males. I tend to be a problem solver, a categorizer, and I try to be the fixer. I'm not interested in dying each day for my son, Josh. I'm interested in, oh, look what's happening today. Let's fix this. Guys tend to be fixers, okay? And women can be fixers too, don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying, as you look at the difference between guys and gals, gals process things with a little bit more emotion. Guys process things a little bit more detached, if you will. Not that we don't care, it's just that we're a little bit more detached. But now you're getting into weird generalities and stuff, and people can find all kinds of faults with that kind of reasoning. It's just my observations. But the thing is, if what you are doing isn't working for you, then that's when you need to know that it's not that you're crazy and that you're not coming unglued. This is a stress response. And again, here's a guy processing. And this is an abnormal stress response because I'm not feeling good anymore, and I don't know if I can go on anymore. I think I need to find somebody, and you've heard it. And said, so you know that there is a change. But that's all I can say. It's like, you know, if it's working for you and the kid's, you know, making it through each day, and you're making it through each day, and you've got a wonderful relationship with your spouse and the other kids, then God bless you. You are bulletproof. But many of the parents, including my wife, this was not so the case. We needed a little extra help there.
There's been a video circulating on YouTube and on Facebook of a famous actress. And it's for heart health is what the purpose of it is. But it's seriously the autism mom's mantra is that she's making her kids' lunches and she's fixing her husband's lunch and she's getting everybody out the door in the morning. And the whole time she's having a heart attack and she's in denial. And it's pretty funny if you can find it. I can't remember what it's called. I'm trying to find it. But she's breaking out in a sweat and she's still in denial and she ends up laying on the floor and she's like, I'm fine, really, I'm fine. And then she realizes maybe she's not fine. And I think that's often where we have to find ourselves is laying on the floor with a heart attack before we realize maybe I'm not fine, maybe I do need some help.
And I think that's great because we're going to all have different levels. I thought it was just guys who lived in the river of denial, especially when they find out that their child's, you know, mom says, you know, I think he's autistic. No, he's not. He's just slow to speak, you know, that kind of thing. I thought it was guys had the franchise on on denial. But again, the purpose of our talk here is to say, hey, are these some of the symptoms that you're having? And is it becoming unbearable? And guess what? There is help for you, and it doesn't have to be in the form of a drug, though it can be if you can't afford it, and that you need to ask for help. And it might be from a nurse practitioner, might be from your family practice folks, but you need to ask for help, and we don't have to find you on the floor in a cold sweat, because that's what I'm talking about, that if you don't take care of this, it tends to get worse unless we can make your kid better. I can tell in an instant when I have a mom come in with a child for a follow-up, and I say, well, how are things going? And she says, I'm hanging in there. Well, I know real quickly I've got some work to do. Why? Because I used to kid my wife about this. I said, are you guys like still connected by the umbilical cord? Why can't he have a bad day and you still have a good day? I notice with my wife and many of the moms I take care of, if the child has a great day, the mom is soaring. If the child has a bad day and school called you up and asked you to come pick him or her up out of the school, when I come home, my wife would be like, you've got to get something done here. And it's like, what? What did I do? I just walked in the door. I got three other boys, my son Josh, and it's like my wife's going, we have to talk. And it's like, oh, my gosh. You know, like, would you like some wine first? No. And you know, because, you know, again, what I'm talking about personal experience plus the parents that I get to take care of. So it's not just, you know, when that phone rings, you don't think it's your sister or girlfriend. It's got to be school calling. And you go into, like, a little stress response just when the phone rings. Or when we go to church, we'd wait. My wife would be constantly looking up at the screen to see if Josh's number came up saying, come get him, you know, 32. Come get Josh, because he's coming unglued in the classroom. Now, this was years ago. I mean, they didn't have special needs classrooms at churches or at schools back then. A lot of schools they did, but not in the churches at all. So it was really difficult. So everything was stressful. And, of course, going out to a restaurant, stressful. So all I wanted to be able to present tonight was there are things that you can do to help you climb back up your rope so you're not always at the end of your rope, that you're three or four knots above and you feel in a pretty good position. Not great. I mean, obviously, as a parent, you're not going to feel totally great until your kid's working at a much higher level. But there are things we can do.
In looking at your website, Doctor, I was wondering if omega fatty acids would be something that we should consider. I know that they're good for just everybody, but my son is on omega-3s, and I just wondered if it might be something that would help with stress.
Well, omega-3s are great as an anti-inflammatory, and I think you're right. I think there's probably things that we can still tease out of all the things that are required for stress. But again, it starts getting more and more expensive and more things for you to need to take. So if you told me I'm stressed out, can omega-3s help me? I'd say, can we do vitamin C, ashwagandha, and valerian root first? You know, kind of get you back to functioning. I think omega-3s are important. I take DHA every day. There's good literature to support that DHA and carnitine protect someone from Alzheimer's disease. And being at the ripe old age in my 50s, I really would like not to go down that road if I don't have to. Adult onset autism, I call it. So there's some neat things that we can do to prevent. And I think omega-3s are important for all of us.
A lot of women in my age category are starting to deal with menopausal issues and stress. And I wondered what your thoughts were about hormone therapy.
Oh, that's so important. You're absolutely right. And how stress affects hormones and hormones affect your response to stress, you're dead on. Now, talk about something expensive to get into. I mean, right there, you're just saying, well, how are we going to handle vitamin C, ashwagandha, and some more organic fruits and vegetables? Now you get into hormones and managing that. Once again, you have to say, okay, look, I'm perimenopausal. That means I'm probably within a few years, or maybe I'm going menopausal, but maybe I'm not supposed to because the stress is shutting down my normal clock. Okay, so I mean that can happen too. So how you respond as how you feel, you know that with your cycles that many women have had throughout the years, how you feel, how you remember things, do you feel like being loved, giving love, feeling pretty, how your skin looks, how your hair glows. It's all an intricate balance of progesterone and estrogen, testosterone, your thyroid function, of course, your adrenal function. And if it's like a beautiful ballet, and when they're all working great, you're on top of the world. You feel bulletproof. And when you're like, for many women, the week before, things aren't so good. And you feel more angry and more bitter and a little bit more, I'll use the medical term, snarky. They've got cutesy little names like PMS and all this stuff. And if you see your OBGYN, if you're under 40, they give you a birth control pill. And if you're and Prozac, and if you're over 40, they remove your innards. They do a hysterectomy. And you're absolutely right. I can't tell you how many body aches, joint aches, headaches, migraines are due to low progesterone. Okay, so that's a whole another topic in itself, in the balancing out of progesterone and estrogen, and also I think hormone replacement therapy is very, very important, and it can be heavily impacted by chronic stress.
Mm-hmm. I found the video. It's the Go Red for Women presents Just a Little Heart Attack, and it's on YouTube. I have sent you, doctor, I have sent you the link so you can watch it. It's just very funny.
Okay.
You might incorporate it into your presentation or something. I don't know, but it's exactly how I feel most days. we have time for probably one more question, and then I'm going to send you a copy of all the questions and comments that have come in so you can address the ones you want to address personally. But also, if anyone has a question for you after the presentation is over, where should they go? What should they do?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard, and I'll tell you why, because I'm in California, and the California Medical Board is pretty strict on giving out information. Mm-hmm. You have to be a patient, and if you're not a patient, then you're giving out medical advice without being a patient. They frown on that highly, and guys, I'd like to keep my medical license for as long as I can. So that's a bit tough, because people, when they ask, they don't want to ask general questions. They're really interested about themselves or their kid. And then I have to say, okay, so how old's your child? And then tell me about this. And all of a sudden now it becomes a doctor's appointment. So it's kind of hard to answer questions kind of like that. Mm-hmm. They can see my book, Healing and Preventing Autism, that I wrote with Jenny McCarthy. And that's got a lot of things in it. Mending Autism is a great source of information in what I do.
It really is. I'm there now, and there's lots of information here, guys.
And what I'd say is go there, but just calling up a doctor's office and saying, can I have just 5 or 10 minutes, the doctor's here, multiplied by, 10,000, it's like it just can't work. It can't work. And also, but if they want to, they can go to drjerryk.com, drjerryk.com, drjerryk.com. And they can go to that website, and there's some information there how to contact the office. And they can get that through mendingautism.com. There's Dr. Jerry Kay on there. They can push that button, and you can get to me that way if you want to.
Very good. The final question for the evening is, I have thyroid issues. Son has autism, and another son has NLD. He is depressed and has a lot of anxiety. I was wondering if there could be a relation between these issues and the thyroid.
We don't know. And, I mean, you'd think so, because you see the three in the family, and you'd want to say, well, something's obviously there. Is it a gene? Is it the methylation pathway, B12 and all? But we don't know. And what's frustrating is, and I'm sure everybody who's listening to this can be kind of can nod their head with it, is that I have not gotten any help from any of my medical schools. Here I live in Southern California, the mecca of medicine, or one of the meccas of medicine, I should say, just not step on any toes. There's UCLA, UC Irvine, USC. To the south of me is UC San Diego. To the north of us is UC Davis and their Mind Institute. And around there is UC San Francisco. Lots of medical schools. How many of them are pumping out information how to manage these kids? Constipation, diarrhea, how to manage stress in moms with special needs kids. Nobody. They're all silent on it. Nobody's helping us. Nobody's giving anything to the pediatrician saying, if you have a parent with a child with special needs and they're constipated, here's our approach from UCLA. Nobody's helping us. So to answer these very high-powered questions, I've got this, my son's got that, my next son's got that, do you think there's a genetic connection? Well, even if I said yes, the only time that would be really important is if you decide to make another baby. If you're saying, huh, after all this, I'm not making any more kids. Are you kidding me? Then it doesn't matter, and you got what you got, and we've got to say, can we fix it? Genetics is also important where, hey, with that kind of thing, maybe it is a methylation pathway, and they'd all benefit from B12 injections or something like that. So that might be helpful. But that's a very good question. And